Welcome to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast, presented by the FTN Network, breaking down NFL action with the info you need to crush your fantasy leagues.
Welcome back, good people, to the FTN Fantasy Football Podcast. Y'all know who it is. You have heard the voice for the past 3, 4, 5, however many episodes myself along with Derek Brown did together. But it is a new day because we have another host, co-host. I don't even know what to call him. I'll just say that the expertise in the wizardry in which one Josh Larkey brings to the table, the new chief analytics officer over here at FTN Network, FTN Fantasy, I am truly excited for the opportunity to co-host this thing with you, Josh. So welcome to the show. Welcome to FTN. I'll give you the floor to just say what you need to say real quick before we get in the show. But I'm honored to do this with you, man. So take it away, brother.
Thanks, Ray. Yeah, we did one podcast together last year, and I think the people really enjoyed that. That was very early in my podcasting life. That was a little early in yours as well compared to how seasoned you are now. So really looking forward to this. And I think that this was a big selling point for me when Kevin approached me about joining FTN and talked about what I'd be doing. He was like, the people are going to love you and Ray going back and forth, because I think in terms of the film community, you've got to be up there top two, top three most respected minds. When it comes to the analytics work, I do analytics work. So the two sides of the spectrum, I think that everyone's going to really enjoy that. And what's cool is that, like we were saying before we started the audio, there's going to be players where one of us likes them more than the other. There's going to be players where neither of us likes them. And then there's going to be those special moments where film and analytics come together and go, yes, this player is certified, good at the game. And as you said so eloquently yesterday, can you fucking ball or not, period? Those are the players we're going to be looking for. So I'm ready for this, the analytics and film. Let's get it started.
Yeah, man. Yeah, let's roll into it. And you, sir, you are a little too modest. You are definitely top two, top three analytic minds in the game. I wasn't going to let you start the show with that. I know I appreciate the humble brag there, but I'm going to put that shit out there for you. You're definitely one of the tops in the game. So, yeah, man, we got a show tonight. So we last did the show a couple of weeks ago, and we did a rookie mock draft, Derek and myself. And Josh, it's like we've sort of reached this point in the process where it's kind of like dead period, right? Combine is over. Pro days that are meaningful are done. The NFL draft is right around the corner, but there's nothing really going on. No free agents, none of that kind of stuff. It's a weird spot that we're in right now at this point in Dynasty. And I've been advocating and telling people, man, we really should start looking, or at least thinking about, potential landing spots for these rookies. You know, NFL draft comes around, we're thinking about rookie drafts, not just for Dynasty, but for redraft purposes as well. Which one of these rookies are actually good enough that we may want to consider taking in a best ball, in one of your best ball teams or a redraft league later this fall? But we got to start looking at some of these landing spots, Josh, from free agency, draft capital, all of that. What are your kind of thoughts, and where do you want to take this first episode with these rookies and landing spots, man?
So I was thinking that we could kind of blend what each of us is good at this time of the year. So one thing that I'm not as good at this time of the year is having the super nuanced take on this player specifically, where I'm like, oh, I've watched 200 reps. This is exactly how his game plays out. A lot of my work in April is going to be, I've looked at statistically how this player is doing, looking at the projected draft capital and trying to figure out how likely it is that I'm going to end up caring about this player 6 months, 1 year from now. Whereas you're so much more in tune with the players. So I figured with this first episode, I'd trim down the amount of players we talk about to guys that had about just historically going to have a 1 in 3 or better chance of being actually fantasy relevant for your dynasty teams or for redraft teams at some point in their careers. And that, yes, of course you want to hit on those fringe prospects. I mean, you had just the all-time Eli Mitchell call from last season. So it's not that that's not important. However, that's a much smaller part of Dynasty. What is there going to be? Maybe at max one James Robinson, one Eli Mitchell a year. But there's going to be many more real fantasy contributors coming in those early rounds of the draft. So that's kind of what we have set up for today for everyone. So I can just kind of kick off like how I've narrowed the player pool down, yeah. And then we can just start going through it all.
Yeah. Let us know, because I'm interested in this hit rate stuff. You know, I believe in it as well, but I want to see where you're going, because I think it's this draft class itself, Josh. Like when we're looking at 2022 in general, where I sit today, I don't know how many true, you know, first or second round talents are actually in this class, and I don't know how many of these guys are we sort of forcing into, you know, second round draft capital buckets because, you know, Rashad White may be the best of what's there, but what's there doesn't even sniff a candle what was there in 2021 or 2020. So I feel like we're just kind of, with some of these guys, man, we're just forcing them up the rookie draft board in reality. Maybe we shouldn't even be, maybe they don't matter at all. I don't fucking know. Just tell us what you found out and what you looked at.
So no, actually, I think you brought up a really good point, because one thing I've thought about is looking at this quarterback class, and there's nobody in this class that I prefer to Mac Jones from last year. And we saw Mac Jones as a mid first round pick. I mean, looking back, you can say like, oh, look, he crushed as a rookie. He should have gone higher. But at the end of the day, there were five quarterbacks that would have been the QB1 in this class. For me, out of those five, Zach Wilson was my QB5 pre-draft and post-draft, but it doesn't matter. If Zach Wilson was in this class, I'd be looking at him as the QB1. And I think that you're right. Like, that's some of the context that has to be put in here, is that, yes, there's going to be stronger draft classes, weaker draft classes, and that this is probably a weaker quarterback class and a weaker running back class than we've had in some of the more recent years. So with that in mind, essentially what I did is I looked at 2011 to 2020. So that's a 10-year sample where those 2020 guys had 2020 and 2021 to produce. So everyone has at least two seasons to do something in the NFL. And what I looked at is I just took all the players that were drafted in round 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to round 7. And for quarterback, I looked at guys who played at least 12 games in a season, so they couldn't have a major injury that year, and they ended up having 16 points per game or more that season. And then I just saw, like, did this quarterback ever have a season where they had 16 or more points per game playing 12 games? And kind of what you'd expect, the round one quarterbacks, that's kind of the sweet spot. Mm-hmm. Just over half, 51% of the quarterbacks drafted in round one over that 10-year period have hit 16 or more fantasy points a game at some point. So 51%. Round two, that drops to only 36%. And then round three, that drops to 16%. So we're going to X out the round three quarterbacks. We're just going to look at round one or round two guys. The Davis Mills from last year, that is definitely... Yeah. That is the exception. I mean, even Davis Mills would be one of the top quarterbacks in this 2022 class. So gotta give the guy Davis Mills some gotta give him his props. That he was a decently talented quarterback prospect in his own right. So do you have any initial thoughts on that with quarterback? Does that pass the sniff test that you pretty much want to be a round one quarterback? Round two's okay, and then it's like dust after that.
For me, and I think I exhausted myself last year with defending Mac Jones so much. There were a lot of people who, you know, it's funny, hindsight, looking back on it now, I think there's no doubt Mac Jones would be in a tier of his own in this class. I mean, he'd be the top quarterback. People would kind of argue or try to talk themselves into Malik because of the rushing upside. But even going back to, I don't know where the hell, sometimes Larky, I just go on a damn tangent. Don't know where we're going with that. But the point is, if to your point, like he was QB 15 off of the board, he went in the middle of the first, and I'm not arguing quarterback position anymore. I put out my little ranks, and then if they get first round draft capital, I want them. If they get second round draft capital, I kind of am just like, all right, well, I'll take you at value at cost in the round. And then after that, I want no interest. Third round quarterbacks, the Dak Prescotts of the world that hit being a fourth round pick. You just can't bet on that. I want first round quarterbacks. If they're drafted in round one, I'm interested to a degree. And I think 2022 is really going to test the threshold of how much interest you truly have and how much this data is truly going to factor into your rookie drafts, because some of the guys that are going to go round one, like you said, I doubt they would be there in any other class, man.
Mm-hmm. Now we can move on to running backs. What I did for running back, I kept the 12 games played caveat. You got to play enough of a season for me to know that you were actually playing that season. And I dropped it down from 16 to 12 PPR points a game. That is just an arbitrary cutoff. If you want higher, I can go back to the well and do more research. If you want lower, I can go back and do more research. But I felt like 12 PPR points a game. You notice this player, they're flex viable. Just to give the people an idea of someone that wouldn't have quite made the cut, last year A.J. Dillon was around 11 PPR points a game. So he was, I mean, you could probably flex him at times during the year. He was definitely not really helping your fantasy squad all that much overall. So that's the type of player that is just missing the cut. So these guys are a little bit better than A.J. Dillon, where they're a true flex-worthy play. And in round one, from 2011 to 2022, we had 16 running backs, drafted 11 hit. That is a very nice 69% hit rate. So pretty much 2 in 3 of those running backs are hitting, kind of what you should expect. I mean, Josh Jacobs, I feel like he's just my poster child for the committee back that was very slow and was not an exceptional pass catcher. And then next thing you know, he is just more than productive in fantasy. You want him on your teams. Year after year, the guy is going to be giving you fantasy points. So it just kind of shows that those round one running backs, outside of injury, they usually hit. Round two, we drop from 69% down to 50%. That's still good, though. It's like your Jonathan Taylor, DeAndre Swift. There's a lot of really good running backs, Nick Chubb, that are round two picks. Round three, it's another pretty steep decline. 34% of round three running backs are hitting that threshold. So pretty much 1 in 3 of the Antonio Gibson type round three running backs. Yeah. You get your Keyshawn Vaughns. Yeah. There's a lot of misses in the round three as well. And then round four, it drops precipitously to 15%. So that's why I think we cut it off at, you basically want a day one or day two running back. I'm not super keen on taking my shots on these round four and onward guys when we're doing an episode like this where we're just looking at those high probability guys. So we could argue maybe Rashad White shouldn't be a round three type pick in some other classes. He might sneak in there this year, but I think generally that's kind of where it's headed. Day one or day two running backs. Yeah. You want them on your fantasy team.
100%. I mean, you want those guys. And, you know, even when you look at, you know, 15%, like that's worth a dart throw in the final round of your rookie draft, right? It's not like it's, you know, 4%, no chance, 0%. It's just, like you said, you want, in particular, first and second round running backs. And then the third round, you've got some misses in there as well. You know, Trey Sermon of the world. But, you know, 34, 35% is still solid. So day one, day two draft capital is what you want. Dart throws after that.
Yeah, well, actually, I'll introduce receivers, and then I'm going to hit on that point a little more with some later round data to kind of show why you really want to draft those late round running backs over random sleeper. I'm putting it in quotes for all you audio people out there. Sleeper receivers, where the data is just going to, we'll get to it. It's bleak. It's going to break some hearts when draft day comes around and your favorite receiver gets round four draft capital, and that kind of means they're toast. So with receiver, I did 12 PPR points a game as well. Well, I'm all for the equality with the running backs and receivers. And with the receivers, round one receivers are hitting that 12 PPR points a game threshold, 46% of them. So nearly half of round one receivers are going to give you a solid fantasy relevant season in their careers. Round two, it's very similar. I think a lot of us are starting to catch on to that just intuitively. As you think about who the best receivers are in the NFL, a lot of them are second-round talents. And that second round drops from 46% in round one down to 41% in round two. Basically the same. Like, there's very little difference there. You want your receiver in round one or round two. Round three, it drops to 25%. So suddenly only 1 in 4 receivers are hitting for you in round three, which is why if we're, or 1 in 4 receivers. So if we're looking at that 1 in 3 cutoff for today's episode, unfortunately, if you're a receiver being projected to go round three, we're not going to talk about you much for this episode. Yeah. That's just that their hit rate's going to be a bit lower. Now, how does that everything pass the sniff test? And then, all right, let's dive into the bleak stuff. So I did a little coding while you were talking just to pull up my other hit rates. So the round four running back, 15% hit rate. Round five, 15% hit rate. Mm. Round six, 12%. So rounds 4, 5, and 6, 15, 15, 12. Receiver
like that.
In round four is not 15% like running back. It's 7. Round five was 3. Round six jumped up a little bit to 6%. But basically, they are all 7% or lower. You are basically half as likely to break out as those day three receivers compared to the day three running back. So that right there, when you talk about how you always hit running back at the end of your rookie drafts and take those shots, the data 100% supports that. So that right there, that's film and analytics. That is coming together in harmony.
Boom.
Yeah. 2 times more likely for those late round running backs to do something over a full season than those receivers.
That's why y'all all hated Amon-Ra St. Brown, right? The analytics community said that's a bad bet, Amon-Ra St. Brown, because he was a fourth-round pick, right?
Yeah, he was a big outlier. He was the fourth-round pick, and I didn't even think he had a bad profile. If he went round three in the draft, honestly, I would have taken him more in my rookie drafts. But yeah. I think like the litmus test for me was the Kadarius Toney versus Amon-Ra St. Brown. And I was I actually thought if they were both drafted in the same round, I would have had 100% more. Like, I would have had only Amon-Ra St. Brown, no Toney, if they were both like a round two or round three picks. But because Toney got the round one draft capital, Amon-Ra got the round four, I was placing the bets on Toney. That looks like the wrong move, but the idea is that in the long run, if you do enough rookie drafts and have enough dynasty teams, that it's going to pay off more than not with this type of strategy. However, like, one thing I'm missing is like, I'm not grinding the film. So I don't know, like, if Amon-Ra St. Brown just happens to be really, really good at the game and it was just like a mistake for teams to pass on him. So yeah, that was one where analytics is going to swing and miss and go, well, because round four receiver, 7% of them hit. So Amon-Ra,
it makes sense. Like, I get it. You know, I'm looking at it and in my mind, I'm just thinking about it like, no shit, he was good at USC. I mean, he had been balling, but, you know, as you said, the probability, and that's all we're playing. It's however you want to slice it, however you measure it, you're playing a probability game, right? And you want to stack as many things in your favor to have a favorable outcome. And I don't think your process was wrong at all with going with Kadarius. I mean, shit, he went in the first round. Another player didn't even get picked until day three of the draft. I mean, to me, it's pretty cut and dry with that one, and I think it was reflected. So that one is just – I just wanted to use that as an example to say that's why a lot of people said Amon-Ra is a bad bet because of the draft capital. And the only thing before we get to the rest of this, Josh, is does that change? Like, after you see evidence of a player being successful with bad draft capital, whether that's in Elijah Mitchell and Amon-Ra St. Brown – you know, a Tyreek Hill back in his day. Does that change your future outlook on said player, or do you go into the next season still saying, oh, well, he was only a fourth-round pick or a sixth-round pick? Like, just real quick, I just want to know, like, how does that evolve?
Oh, it totally changes. Once I get the NFL data, everything's changed. So I'll give you an example. So only 12% of round six running backs hit. 12%. Elijah Mitchell, round six running back. Do I think there's a 12% chance he can put up some type of fantasy relevant season next year? No, it's way, way, way higher than 12%. Right. I would say that if he's healthy, there's probably a 12% chance that he doesn't put up a fantasy relevant season. Right. So for me, like, once the NFL data comes in, then I totally flip. Just like Amon-Ra, 7% chance is a round four pick that he's going to hit. Do I think there's a 7% chance he can be good in fantasy next year? Like, absolutely no way. So, yeah, that good one to clarify. Once the NFL data comes in, that just kind of supersedes everything. I'm not going to be like,
okay,
oh, like Kadarius Toney still has a, like Kadarius Toney definitely has a less than 46% chance of hitting, even though he's a round one receiver, because we saw some bumps and bruises along the way. Just like, right. I know we both love Rondale Moore. Rondale Moore probably does not have that 40% hit rate as a round two receiver anymore. Now that we have the NFL data, he's probably dropping down, I don't know, well, maybe 20% or something. Like, it's going to drop quite a bit when you see the usage that he had as a rookie. And it's like, oh, wow, the team loved him and put him on the field and then realized when he was on the field, wait, we don't even like this guy. Let's give him fewer reps as the season goes on. Even though usually with the rookie receiver, they get more reps as the season goes on. So it was backwards trend. And it's like, whoa, it doesn't matter how much either of us like Rondale Moore. Doesn't matter if you like the film or I like the analytics. We have to make those adjustments once we get that NFL data. We see what the teams are doing with them. So that's a good point. I do not hate Amon-Ra anymore. I would much rather have Amon-Ra on my dynasty team than Kadarius Toney. So I have some corpses on my bench where I'm like, is this guy ever going to make the starting squad? I don't know at this point.
Oh, man. Well, he's got a better shot than my guy, old Jalen Reagor, but maybe a change in scenery will help Reg out. I don't know, Larky. I think that one might be over. Signed, sealed, and delivered. Coffin, 6 feet deep. But yeah, so you didn't talk about the tight end hit rate, and for some reason, I seem to not care about tight ends at all anymore, unless it's Kyle Pitts or Pat Freiermuth. I don't know. Which tight end should we care about, first round or second round? I don't know, man. It's just, it seems like it's just as hard to hit on tight end as it is to hit on damn quarterback.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So I'll give a little disclaimer for the tight end one. The sample size with this is so much smaller. So when we're looking at the 2011 to 2020 period, there were 9 round one tight ends, whereas there were like 43 round one receivers. So in terms of pass catchers, there's just not that many tight ends. And like someone like an OJ Howard who doesn't deliver in fantasy is just going to tank what a round one tight end looks like, or David Njoku. Whereas like a Kyle Pitts greatly helps in terms of what a round one tight end looks like, because there's just so few of them. So any guy that hits or misses is really, we're swinging the pendulum. So with round one tight ends over that 10-year sample, 78% of them hit. So that's kind of cool. We're getting that 12 PPR points a game season at some point in their career. However, I think one thing that we can kind of intuitively know is that it's not necessarily like with a running back, if a running back hits, they kind of produce in the first year or second year. Tight end, though, some of these hits, it's really, really drawn out. And I always think of like a Delanie Walker, where like you didn't really want him in fantasy until he was already so far off your team that you realized, oh, I kind of like Delanie Walker. Suddenly he's breaking out. And I feel like tight end is probably the most common position where these later breakouts happen. And all of a sudden you're like, oh my God, how did I not know this guy was going to hit? Like, of course he was going to hit. Look what he's doing now. So yeah, we have the 78% hit rate in round one. It drops to 38% in round two. There's actually 21 round two tight ends. So the sample a lot bigger, 38%. So kind of a 1 in 3 chance with those guys. Round three drops to 17%. So we're not going to care about any tight ends drafted after round two for the purpose of this episode. So it's pretty much McBride is the only guy that we'll talk about. And I mean, yeah, kind of like what you said, like unless it's tight end premium, am I all that excited about drafting Trey McBride? Not really. Like I feel like my strategy with tight ends is I generally don't draft them as rookies. And if I like them, I'll just pick them up in year two or year three and I'll just trade for them. And that it seems like they're often pretty expensive in a rookie draft. There's usually going to be someone that likes that tight end more than you. And then you can just kind of buy back in the next year. So, I mean, I feel like this last year kind of spoiled us with Pitts and Freiermuth. Yep. But if you think about the other years before that, pretty, pretty rare to have these rookie tight ends doing all that much in fantasy.
Agreed. 100%, man. 100%. And when I see these numbers, just makes me want to fade him even that much more outside of a tight end premium. So, all right, we're going to do a little mock draft type pair team with player type deal, Josh. Is that what we're doing?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that with each player, we can kind of talk about a couple landing spots we might like. and if there's any landing spots that we're not as crazy about. Since I feel like I've heard a lot of podcast episodes, and I know you've done a couple where it's like, let's react to this ESPN mock draft. How would we draft these players based on those landing spots? Or you do your own draft and it's like mock draft where you're like, hey, I think Kenny Pickett is going to go to this team. I think Malik Willis is going to go to this team. So we're going to do it a little bit differently where it's, hey, with Kenny Pickett, what do you think there's a best case scenario landing spot? Is there a landing spot you don't want to see him go to? Like Garrett Wilson, is there a place you want to see him go, don't want to see him go? So that's going to be kind of how we do this, is just a little bit of a different swing on it. Since I feel like one thing I've wanted as a, because I'm such a big consumer in April of the draft content, like I consume your content, and I'm always like, all right, well, like where do you want to see the player go? Or where do you not want to see the player go? And that's a question that I feel like I haven't been able to get answered yet. So selfishly, we're just going to take the rest of this show and I'm going to get my answers as to where these players should or shouldn't go for fantasy. So I'm just going to kind of tee you up and I'm just going to take my notepad out. And everyone out there listening can take their notepad out. We're going to learn about some landing spots that Ray is optimistic, pessimistic about. So let's start off with Kenny Pickett. He's projected to go early to mid first round in all these different mock drafts. So what are your thoughts on Kenny Pickett? I know he's tied to Carolina pretty heavily. Do you think that's pretty certain? Is there anywhere else that you think he might be able to go or that you want to see him go?
It seems like that's locked in, right? And I don't ever want to, you know, speak in absolutes or speak in certainties, but just too many connections from the collegiate connection to Matt Rhule, the owner, David Tepper, and his pick connections. And then I do think, man, you know, my thing with Kenny Pickett is, regardless of what you think about him and his proverbial ceiling or whatever that may or may not be, it's hard for me to believe that anybody on that Carolina team could get up and get excited to see Sam Darnold step back under center. Like, and I'm just, maybe this is a completely unquantifiable area, but just in talking to people that I know, like, they, you don't spend all summer training for that shit, man, to come in there and truly have to deal with ineptitude. And you saw that towards the end of Carolina season, Robbie Anderson, them, like, pretty much saying, get this dude off the fucking field because he's terrible. I think they have to take a quarterback, and I think Kenny Pickett is an upgrade, even if he's a check down Charlie, somebody that's not going to turn the ball over left and right. Just I think they have to go the quarterback route, and the reality is, I think, you know, Malik Willis, who you'll ask me about, I do think right now, today, if I had to put money on it, is going to be the selection by the Detroit Lions. So, Carolina needing a quarterback, Kenny Pickett probably the most pro-ready kind of guy to throw in there right away. You know, I think it makes a ton of sense. I think the Carolina rumors make sense for Kenny Pickett. It makes sense for Carolina. They seem to just be looking for some stability at quarterback, and we can argue if that's the right, wrong or right philosophy to build a franchise. But it seems like they are truly just looking for some stability at that position. And I think Kenny Pickett provides that.
Yeah, I kind of thought that the Sam Darnold was not going to be their 2022 starting quarterback just for a while. And then I feel like the DJ Moore extension kind of confirmed that for me. I mean, yeah, it was a lot of money, but he knew he was going to be able to get a lot of money from anyone. And I don't think he wants to stick around in Carolina if they're like, hey, Sam Darnold's probably going to be your guy. And if he's not, we don't have a plan. So I think he was probably sold on something like Kenny Pickett. I still think they're going to be heavily in the market for like Jimmy G once he's able to throw again post-surgery. Since I don't think any of these quarterbacks, based on their statistical profile, jumps out at me as like, oh my God, I could not believe what I saw. Put this guy in the game on day one.
Yeah.
So do you think Carolina's a good landing spot fantasy-wise for Pickett? I'm a little worried about the offensive line, but maybe with those weapons, it doesn't matter.
The O-line is bad. The O-line is not good, which would lead, and maybe that's why some of the rumor that they're still interested in. I saw a rumor today that Matt Corral is still a player of interest for Carolina. Matt Corral, personally for me, is my top-rated quarterback in this class, but I do think at least he provides some mobility. He's played in an RPO offense, you know, his entire career, and You know, Carolina had a lot of success with Cam Newton running that type of offense. I think it's good for fantasy, for DJ Moore managers, for Christian McCaffrey managers, and maybe in time, whomever the number two is, you know. Whether you say it's Terrace Marshall, Robbie Anderson, I'm not going to get into that today. But I do think at least Kenny Pickett can throw the ball accurately. He is a he's not a dual threat kind of guy, but he's mobile. He's not a sitting duck in the pocket. He can move around. I think it's a fine landing spot. I don't think it's the best landing spot for a quarterback, but I think it's a fine landing spot. And I think if you roster Christian McCaffrey or DJ Moore, you would be happier with Kenny Pickett at some point. Or maybe, or shit, maybe he's not the guy year one and they do bring in a Jimmy Garoppolo, but I think long term, you'll be happy with Kenny Pickett in Carolina.
Sounds good. And then let's move on to Malik Willis. So personally, just I don't know too much about Malik Willis. Like I know that he's got the big arm. He's very mobile. He took a lot of sacks. He made a lot of turnover worthy plays. So it's kind of like the yin and the yang. I think Detroit just logically seems like a good landing spot. I don't think necessarily if I was working for the Lions in their front office, would I say we should use the second overall pick on a project quarterback like a Malik Willis? But I think it's nice that he wouldn't have to start from day one and that Goff is competent. And I like that they have a very strong offensive line. And I think to me, that seems like that's often more important in that, like, Carolina doesn't have that strong offensive line. And that I think the Lions are actually a better landing spot. Even if you think DJ Moore and Christian McCaffrey are just so much better than, I don't know, like Swift and Hawkinson or whatever the Lions equivalent is, or Swift and Amon-Ra, something like that. I think that offensive line would end up being pretty helpful. So I think that's it's a bad real life move for the Lions to draft Malik Willis at 2. But that seems to me at the surface like a pretty good landing spot for fantasy, where he can kind of develop there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's the best landing spot. That's why I said I like Carolina, but I didn't think it was the best. I think Detroit's the best landing spot. You've got a young offensive line. They just invested, the number 5 overall pick or 6 overall pick or 7, whatever it was, in Penei Sewell last year. They got him early in the draft. Frank Ragnow. They've got a good offensive line. You have good weapons around. You have TJ Hockenson and DeAndre Swift and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, that's a good situation that they're building. Like, is Dan Campbell the coach of the future? I don't care. Quarterback, first round quarterback, number 2 overall pick quarterback will outlast whatever head coach is in place that would be up there drafting. So I don't care about the Dan Campbell coach thing right now. You know, my thing is, while I agree with you, I don't think drafting a project level quarterback like Malik Willis at number 2 is ideal. But where else are you going to? You're not going to get him at 32. So, I mean, the optimal strategy would be to trade back, right? And I think other teams below them know that. You know, they probably know Detroit wants to trade back and still get their guy. I'm not cutting them any fucking discount. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to force you to make that pick. If you want your quarterback, if I'm the Giants, I'm good at 5, you know, unless you're going to offer. Like, it's like Detroit is having to pay to move back because these teams know it, right? They know that, you know, Houston's not taking a quarterback. The Jets aren't going to do it. The first logical spot is right there at 5 to pick in front of Carolina. So, I mean, it's like they probably have to, man. You're not getting him any later than where they are in striking distance to draft at. Like, they just can't do it. It's kind of like a damned if you do, and there's no guarantee that they'll be bad enough to land C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young next year. Mm-hmm. So, it's just a weird spot that Detroit's in, but I tend to agree with you.
So let's say Detroit doesn't take Malik Willis. Is there anywhere else that you'd get excited, or where you're like cowering in fear at the lack of fantasy points, where you're like, oh God, I can't believe this team took him? Is there anything like that? Or, I mean, I guess the one problem is like none of these quarterbacks are such generational prospects that we can get exactly so passionate. But is there anywhere else that you think would be? So I think we're probably both in agreement then. Detroit potentially just the best spot, where it's a very good offensive line.
Yes.
And they have enough weaponry. Is there anywhere else that you think is close to that level?
I think Atlanta would be fun to the degree that he'll just be out there trying to figure it out with Kyle Pitts. Like, and they probably would be very bad, right? Atlanta would probably, if Malik Willis was there, what will happen is, I know a lot of people still think there's something left in the Mariota tank. Loved him as a college player. I just don't see it happening. So I think they're just going to be bad. I think they're going to struggle through the season. Kyle Pitts is going to get all kind of inaccurate targets left and right. He'll probably still end up being fine. But I think Atlanta is going to be bad. So I would actually like that for Malik, because I don't think they would start him right away. I think they would let Mariota play. Malik could sit back there. They can be bad, have high draft picks next year. Then you build around Malik Willis and Kyle Pitts and potentially get some high-level talent. Maybe they bring Calvin Ridley back. I mean, now you look at that situation, or at least he's back to where they can trade him. So I think Atlanta would be, for fantasy purposes, that might be kind of nice. That maybe not fruitful in 2022, but beyond, Atlanta could be nice.
Mm-hmm. What if one of these guys goes to Washington at 11?
I mean, I just...
kind of a broken franchise. The Snyder news came out earlier today.
That's a shit show in Washington. I wouldn't really care for that. And then Philly, if they did that with Jalen Hurts and they did this messy quarterback competition thing, I just think I just don't know. I don't know. And my thing is, if I'm Philadelphia, are you sure Malik's better than Jalen Hurts? Like, why would you even do that? But they've entertained Matt Corral, I heard. So I just. That's another risky bet. Is Matt Corral or Malik Willis even better than what they have already in Jalen Hurts? I tend to think not.
Yeah, I think if Hurts was in this class, he could very well be the QB1, even though he was a round two pick 2 years ago. It wouldn't shock me if when you look at them and compare them, it's like, oh, round two Jalen Hurts from 2020. You know what? He's kind of looking like the QB1 were he in this class.
Yeah.
I also think that trade with the Saints, though, kind of locked up that 2022 is Hurts' year. They have a ton of firepower in 2023. So if he doesn't do well in 2022, fine. We have enough ammunition. We can trade up and get a quarterback. So it seems like in terms of dynasty, like it's almost like a hot potato where it could be really good. It could be really bad. And it's like... is this potato too hot? Should I throw it away? Should I keep it? And it's not that hot of a potato. So we don't know what kind of potato Jalen Hurts is. We'll go a little more quickly through the next two quarterbacks, since I think there's not as many.
Yeah.
There's not as many spots. So Matt Corral, it seems like he's probably going late in round one. Desmond Ridder probably going late round one, if not early round two. Is there anywhere that you think they're going to go, or any landing spots that you fired up about them? I know you like Corral a lot. Is there somewhere where you're hoping... yeah. He goes, or you don't want him to go somewhere.
I hope he gets the draft capital that matters. You know, I think he's just as much upside as some of these other quarterbacks. And I'd venture to say Corral has more upside than Kenny Pickett if he fires. If Matt Corral and Kenny Pickett fire at the next level, and by that I don't fucking know. Top 15 level type quarterback, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Corral's going to be the one, because he does provide true rushing ability. He's going to be the one that's the more fantasy like productive player if both of those guys hit. So I think Matt Corral. Seems like Seattle, there's a lot of smoke there, but maybe New Orleans, maybe Pittsburgh. I'm just hoping he gets the draft capital. And unfortunately, Larky, Desmond Ridder, I've seen him up close and personal at the Senior Bowl. I've followed his career. I tried to talk myself into him early in the college football season. I just too inconsistent. I think he's going to be a first-round pick, though. You know, right now, if you asked me who I have more confidence in, Matt Corral or Desmond Ridder being first-round picks, seems like there's a ton of smoke and a smoldering, just the coals are going for Desmond Ridder to be a first-round pick. So I do think he's going to get the draft capital. That's going to be one where I just ignore the fucking data and I just don't want him. Mm-hmm. Like, I just don't want him on my roster. And if I do have him, I will trade him. I'll just use that QB insulation to try to move him.
So in terms of late first, I'm looking at the teams picking there. I think it's actually kind of interesting. So the Lions have the 32nd pick as well as the second pick. So I guess if they don't get Malik Willis, maybe they get a Ridder or Corral. But other than that, there's not too many teams picking at the end of the draft that, to me at least, strike me as very QB needy. So just if we're going backwards from the back of the first upwards, we have the Bengals at 31, Chiefs at 30, Dolphins at 29. I think they're giving Tua this year, and then they're going to figure it out. I think it would be kind of silly to do the all-in moves like the trade up for Waddle, the trade for Tyreek Hill, just to take another quarterback. And then we've got Green Bay, Buccaneers, the Titans, the Bills, the Cowboys, the Cardinals, and the next thing you know, we're at the Raiders at 22 and the Patriots at 21. It seems like after the Steelers at 20, I don't really know if any of those teams are in the market until we hit the Lions at 32. So maybe that's when we're going to get a trade up and a team goes, you know what, I'm trading up into the first round because that fifth-year option for the quarterback is so important. If you think that this guy has potential in that, if you're a believer in Corral or Ritter, why take them in the second round when there's nothing you can do other than 4 years of their career? Whereas if you trade up a little bit, give up a little future draft capital, you get that fifth-year option. So yeah. I think it would have to be a trade-up, right? Because it seems like there's kind of that dead zone between the Steelers and Lions.
Again, when I'm saying Desmond Ritter first-round pick, what I'm saying are some teams trading up to get him. Mm-hmm. You know, like I've seen Minnesota at 12. I've seen Pittsburgh mocks with him moved up to get Desmond Ritter. It's going to come down to if Detroit takes Malik at 2, you can guarantee you Carolina's taking Kenny Pickett at 6. And I think at that point, the scarcity around the 2 or 3 viable options that are left could force a Pittsburgh to try to move up. If Malik goes at 2, it will cause a panic. And you got Atlanta sitting there at 8. You got Seattle at 9. You've got, you know, New Orleans who may be in maybe. You know, you've got the Pittsburgh Steelers. I think a team may trade up to get him, unfortunately, and then we have to deal with that shit and how we rank them for fantasy purposes.
All right, so quarterback, not the strongest class. Let's move on to a position I'm actually just genuinely excited about. I think these receivers, there's a lot of really good receivers. So let's talk about some of these receivers now and kind of where we think they might go. So it seems like in mocks, it's pretty much Garrett Wilson, Drake London kind of waffling which one gets drafted first. They both seem like they're going to go early to mid first round. Is there anywhere that you're really hoping for? I mean, Garrett Wilson and Drake London couldn't be more different as receivers. So are there certain landing spots where you're like, this, I really want one of these guys to go to this team and not to this team? What are you thinking in terms of if Garrett Wilson were to suddenly become your wide receiver one in this class, where would he have to go? Or is there nowhere where you could bump anyone ahead of? I think if I remember correctly, Drake London's your number one right now. So like, is there anything where Wilson goes one place and London goes the other and you're like, oh my God, damn it. Wait, yeah, why? I can't believe the landing spot. We need to adjust.
Yeah. I think the landing spot for me at wide receiver, probably Los Angeles, the Chargers with Justin Herbert. And I know that they just re-signed Mike Williams, but Keenan Allen he's not a spring chicken anymore. And if Garrett Wilson is there, I think it's a perfect fit. Offensively and how they can position and scheme their players, I think it's a natural fit with him in L.A., as do I think Drake London as well. But if Garrett Wilson lands in L.A. with Justin Herbert, I have 4 guys inside my tier 1. I got to separate that tier somehow. Mm-hmm. And if they're all equal draft capital, if they're all first round picks, well, now I'm diving in, right? We talk about landing spot doesn't matter. You get tied to Justin Herbert, that matters, in my opinion. That does matter. You know, you get tied to Patrick Mahomes, that's going to matter a little bit more. Like, I'm not just going to be like, oh, Drake London to the Giants, no matter what. If Garrett Wilson goes to the Chargers. So that's a spot for G-Dub that I'd like to see, as well as Drake London, man. I'd love to see one of those wide receivers in L.A.
What about somewhere like Atlanta? I've seen that as a pretty popular landing spot for one of those two at pick 8. Is there one of those guys that you'd prefer there? I mean, they really have nothing at this point outside of Kyle Pitts. I think, is it Olamide Zaccheaus? I believe he is on the depth chart there, wide receiver 1. It's kind of crazy looking. So is there one of those guys you think pairs better with Pitts stylistically or?
No, because Pitts is so I think he can play whatever role. We saw him operate down the field, short and intermediate. Like, he can kind of do, he is truly a unicorn at the tight end position. So I think if they want to be scary, you get the big body wide receiver and just like bully ball people, you know, bully ball defensive backs with Drake London and Kyle Pitts, and find some guy to operate in the slot and do that kind of stuff. But I think Garrett Wilson, Drake London, they would all be nice in Atlanta. In my opinion, if they take a wide receiver at 8, then they're playing for next year. They know they're going to be so damn bad that they're going to end up with Bryce Young or C.J. Stroud in 2023.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at the board. So I think the landing spot, I'd be scared. I'd be like the most scared of for a receiver. It's probably the Jets. And I think the reason I say that is if you're looking at some of these teams that could be in the market for a receiver, like the Falcons. Yeah, this franchise looks terrible right now. But, I mean, they're either going to get a quarterback this year or next year. But I don't believe very much in Zach Wilson. I don't think he showed very much his rookie year. I think it's indicative that the Jets have been in on every big free agent wide receiver. And they've all kind of been like, no, I do not want to play for the Jets.
Yep.
Even though we know the Jets can offer competitive contracts because they have a rookie on that rookie deal. So you know they have money to spend. And I think he's very insulated with his jobs. Like, let's say that the Giants take a receiver. Okay, like, if Daniel Jones isn't the answer this year, they'll just take a guy next year. But with Zach Wilson, he has 3, if not 4 more years if they pick up that fifth-year option. And you're kind of tethered to Zach Wilson for a while. I just don't know if I saw enough for me to get excited about any receiver. And I think out of the kind of that tier of the ultra-elite prospects where like these like clear round one talent receivers, I think the Jets is the landing spot for me, where if a guy goes there, I'm probably going to shuffle them towards the back of the tier, just knowing that they're probably tied to Zach Wilson for the next 2, 3, 4 seasons.
Yeah, that landing spot's not a good one. And then you just have a headache there because now you got to deal with Elijah Moore competing with targets with whomever that is. I'm sure they want to get something out of Corey Davis. I know us in fantasy have no use for him, but I'm sure the Jets want to get something out of their investment, so he will play. You know, that the NFL doesn't work like we can just trade away or cut the assets we don't like. They want to get something out of that Corey Davis contract, uh-huh. So he'll be on the field. And as you said, Zach Wilson, I was not a fan of him coming out. Took a lot of heat over that one, but I just don't have high hope for Zach Wilson. So that landing spot does fucking suck, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think that's the one I'm most afraid of. I put out something on Twitter and I was like, honestly, the Eagles aren't even the scariest landing spot. Like, it has to be the Jets. Because the Eagles, it's like, all right, if Jalen Hurts takes a step forward, cool. All right, now you're tied to a quarterback that took the next step. And like, yeah, he's mobile. But we've also seen Lamar be able to do something with Andrews and Hollywood and Bateman. And like, there's quarterbacks that are lesser who can still support 3 guys. Like, Jimmy G still supported Debo, Ayuk, and Kittle last year. And like, you can have Jalen Hurts could support Devonta Smith, Goddard, and another guy if he takes a step forward. And it's like, hey, if he doesn't take the step forward, cool. They have a shitload of draft capital, and they'll take a quarterback next year or trade for a quarterback next year. So I think the Jets, just because of that Zach Wilson with his contract, the draft capital, that's to me the terrifying one. So now, yep. In terms of middle round receivers, it looks like Jameson Williams and Chris Olave are kind of the 2 guys that are going to go off the board next. Jameson Williams, probably not super fantasy relevant for this season, at least. I don't know exactly when he's returning to the field, but he's probably not starting at all for the first at least like 6 to 8 games. So are there any spots where you like Williams and Olave? I've seen some, I've kind of seen them just like hovering in that mid zone. Like early to mid-teens for both of them.
Yeah, give me Jameson Williams to Buffalo. Give Josh Allen a true field stretcher. Give me him to Buffalo alongside Stephon Diggs, Dawson Knox, and I don't care if he doesn't come back into the playoffs. I think what would happen would be he'd give you a 0 through the fantasy season. He'd show you enough flashes during the playoffs to where his ADP would just skyrocket going into the 2023 season, which is a very realistic outcome. I know they're saying he's on schedule. I mean, he just tore his knee a couple of months ago. A lot of medical professionals that I follow say it's hard to really judge how ahead he is at this stage of the process. But again, even if he didn't play the entire season, he does just a just Josh, he didn't even have to do like just one big game in a playoff for Buffalo would just have people losing their mind about Jameson Williams going into 2023. And Chris Olave, I think for so long we've prayed for Aaron Rodgers to have some more wide receiver help around, and now that Devontae Adams in there, they don't have a choice. And I do think the wide receiver that fits what A-Rodge likes to do is Chris Olave. And I'm not even the biggest Olave fan. He's tier two, but he's towards the back end of tier two. But I think what he does on the field, he's a technician, and he's been that. It was that for 4 years at Ohio State. He's going to be where he needs to be when Rodgers wants him to be there. And I think we've seen with Aaron Rodgers over the years, trust is a big part of his makeup. And I think Olave is the type of receiver with his skill set, being able to run a complete route tree, would be able to gain that trust at some point to make Rodgers trust him enough to go to him. So I think Olave to Green Bay would be a spot that I'd love to see, and J-Mo to Buffalo back of the first.
I like that. I'm a Chargers homer. I saw Williams being mocked a couple times to the Chargers, Olave mocked to the Chargers. I'm not quite sure if the Chargers take one of those guys in the middle, but I think anyone that goes to the Chargers immediately has to skyrocket up the board. So I think we can bring in these next two receivers, and then I've got two teams to bounce off, or actually three teams to kind of bounce off you, and then we'll talk about your favorite team. So we got Treylon Burks and Jahan Dotson. Burks kind of the mid to late first. Jahan Dotson probably late first, if not very beginning of the second. So here's a couple teams that I've been curious about where I feel like them taking a receiver is definitely on the board. The Saints, the Patriots, the Cardinals, and the Titans. I think those four teams have an immediate need at receiver. And I also feel like the Saints, Patriots, Cardinals, and Titans all want to be competitive in 2022. So what do you think about those landing spots? Like, just gut feel, Titans probably not my favorite landing spot, just because this is an offense that has just shown year after year we're running it through Derrick Henry. Even when Henry went down, it's not like they were like, all right, fine, we'll throw the ball 40 times a game. That's not what happened. So I think, to me at least, I just don't love when there's a low pass volume offense. But I don't know, how would you rank those? So I think we could probably agree Titans probably at the bottom. How do you rank, though, like the Patriots, who have Mac Jones going forward, and then the Saints, where, I don't know, James Winston, and then who knows what, but big holes receiver. And then the Cardinals, where it's a very fun, fast-paced offense. But we haven't necessarily seen high-end production outside of I think Hopkins seems like the only guy that's really giving you the difference making production. They like to play a lot of four receiver sets, which is not very fantasy friendly for anyone other than Kyler Murray. So how are you ranking those?
Yeah, the number one spot for me would be New England with Mac Jones. He's a solid young quarterback, and I think if Mac Jones had a true number one, it would be better for the wide receiver in fantasy than Mac Jones. Yes, Mac Jones would be a beneficiary of having a wide receiver one there, a true alpha level prospect player, but I think it would be like goodness for said player, whomever that receiver is. Jahan Dotson, I don't think Treylon Burks fits what they want to do. I don't think I want to see him in New England. I just, for a variety of reasons, I don't think I want to see Treylon there. But a player like Jahan Dotson coming out of Penn State, I think he would make a ton of sense for Mac Jones. I would have New England at the top, New Orleans probably second, followed by Arizona, and then Tennessee would be fourth in the pecking order.
So do you want Burks to the Cowboys then, your team? I know that's kind of been the rumors with the media. Is that the fit that you want? Or is that just something where you'll take it because – I think it's pretty clear at this point, like, they do need another receiver there with what they're trying to do on offense. Still not 100% healthy at the start of the season. Michael Gallup with Lamb and Schultz and what is it? James Washington. That doesn't strike me as a completed depth chart.
No, I think it was a real possibility about 3 weeks ago. I truly do. I think if Treylon Burks were on the board at 24, 3.5 weeks ago, Dallas would have taken him because they need the position. I think he would fit into that offense. And Jerry Jones can't. I mean, he's an Arkansas alum. He can't help himself when it comes to Razorbacks. That's why we drafted Felix Jones in the first round. I believe that was in 2008. But they're not going to do that now. They lost Randy Gregory. The offensive line is in shambles. Dallas is in trouble for a variety of reasons on both sides of the ball, offensive and defensive line. So I don't think Treylon would go to Dallas. I'm not as confident in that right now. But Tennessee would be last on that list, and I would love to – I mean, they need to get Mac Jones somebody. I mean, fuck, man. Like, I get it. Jacoby Myers, Kendrick Bourne, they bring in Devontae Parker. I'm hopeful that that doesn't mean and the reality is I don't think they're going to take one in round one. I don't think you're going to pull the trigger. I think that's why they brought in Devontae Parker, and people aren't going to like it, but that's why they brought in Devontae Parker, is to compete and play alongside Jacoby Myers. Kendrick Bourne is at three, and Devontae Parker is the two to Jacoby Myers is one. So there we go with that.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to round two now. So the one quarterback that seems like probably going round two, we don't even need to talk about him much if you don't want to. Sam Howell. I don't have a lot of good things to say about him analytically. So if you don't love the film, we'll just say that he goes to a team that wants to take a shot on a quarterback in round two.
Yeah. Maybe Detroit. Maybe Detroit just bypasses quarterback and they just take a shot with Sam Howell. But we can go on to running backs.
All right, so this is where it gets very exciting. We've got two running backs that are pretty much guaranteed to go round two. I've seen some buzz about them going round one. The reason why I don't think that's going to happen is outside of the Texans, I can't really think of a landing spot where the team just absolutely needs running back. And it's like, oh, this team, their offense is set except for running back. I know some people say Buffalo, but it's like, that's not really how they've been operating in terms of using draft capital. And I mean, Devin Singletary was actually pretty damn good last year. I'm not saying that they'll probably add to the running back room, but it just doesn't feel like there's any team that, I mean, Texans could use a running back, but are they taking a running back with the number three pick? Absolutely not. I think these guys are pretty much locked in around two. So Breece Hall, probably early to mid round two. Kenneth Walker, kind of middle of round two. Are there any spots that you're really excited about or not excited about for these guys? Because they're for sure going to shake up some depth charts just because there's kind of an established guy everywhere but Houston at this point.
Yeah, I think the first spot that comes to mind, because they do have the capital, would be Atlanta in the second round. I think that'd be a smash spot for either one of these running backs. They go to Atlanta. Here's the thing. If one of them does go to Houston in the second round, some point, second round, you can guarantee they're going to have to battle the veteran for the starting job, right? They're going to have to battle through Rex Burkhead and battle through Marlon Mack and battle through David Johnson. They're not going to be given the keys right out the gate. They go to Atlanta. If Breece Hall can't start day one in Atlanta, there's a problem. Like, he should be starting from day one. So, in my opinion, Atlanta is like sweet, sweet honey when it comes to landing spots for a running back. Team that needs it. It's a young team. They're clearly in a rebuild sort of situation. I think Atlanta would be a dope spot for both Breece Hall or Kenneth Walker early in the second.
I like that. Is there anywhere where you really don't want them to go? It seems like you're not as excited about Houston as a lot of people are. The reason I was excited, so I'm actually kind of excited about Houston. And my thinking is just that I think Davis Mills is kind of legit. And I always like when my running back is on an offense that can be functional. And that defense, there's just holes at every level of the defense. So they're going to have to throw a lot. We saw Davis Mills unleashed many games last year where, I mean, I don't think he's some great quarterback, but I think he's good enough to be a starter. And then at least in fantasy, he gave kind of a fun stat. Is there were as many Davis Mills 300-yard passing games as all the other rookies combined last year. So Davis Mills had four 300-yard passing games, and then the other rookies combined for four as well. So good for.
Yeah, I'm a Davis Mills fan too, man. I'm a Davis Mills fan too. So you're preaching to the choir, baby.
Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's an offense where they're gonna have to move the ball, and I think that's why I would say that if they chose one, it's probably Breece Hall, just because you're gonna want someone that that is an adequate pass catcher for the negative game scripts, whereas Walker, still a little bit unknown. What do you think about the Jets? I could see Kenneth Walker on the Jets, or the other one to bring up would be the Saints for Kenneth Walker, because Kenneth Walker, a ridiculously good pure runner, and I think he could fit well with Carter or Kamara. Do you think either of those are even likely, or what do you think about those two?
The Jets, I think so with the Jets. I think, weren't they in the market for, it was James Conner, I believe. They had something on the table for him in free agency. I think they want to find somebody else to complement Michael Carter. I don't think Michael Carter was ever profiled to be a true three-down workhorse bell cow in that nature. So I think that'd be a good spot. In New Orleans, I meant playing that. You know, when Alvin Kamara was thriving, they had Mark Ingram, who was also really, really good for us in fantasy. So if you find a younger sort of that, right, mainly your first and second down between the tackles grinder, and then you utilize Alvin Kamara where he's most dangerous in space, right? You're not banging him up the middle. I think he had his most carries of his career this past season. I don't think they want to utilize him like that. You get Kenneth Walker in New Orleans. I think that's an awesome spot for him, for the Saints, for fantasy purposes, for Alvin Kamara as well. The Jets, maybe. I'm glad the Dolphins brought in so many running backs, because that just seems like it's going to be a cluster in Miami with everyone they're bringing in, and I just would not like a running back there, or San Francisco, who I'm terrified they're going to draft another running back this year. Like, I'm legitimately fearful they're going to bring somebody else in. Do they do that early? Doesn't seem to be their MO. They spent a third rounder on Sermon and a sixth rounder on Mitchell, so it'll probably be later. But going into the season, I believe they only have two running backs under contract right now, and that's Sermon and Mitchell. So somebody's coming in. Maybe they still have Hasty, but somebody's coming into Frisco. So I wouldn't want to see any of the rookie backs that I like go there, mm-hmm. or Miami, or the Jets, really.
And then a couple more. We can go. This is going to be a long show if we don't reel it in. So I'm going to I'll reel us in. We're going to go rapid fire. Eagles, yes or no? Are you excited about that one in the second round?
No.
Yeah. Kind of same.
No.
And then I think if either of them lasts, it gets pretty intriguing with the Bills at 57 and the Chiefs at 62. Could you see the Chiefs investing heavy draft capital after CEH 2 years ago? Because
I do.
I think they could.
I do. Josh, and I'll be brief. That offense has not looked the same since they had Kareem Hunt. Like, it just operated differently when they had a running back that was capable of moving the ball, catching it out of the backfield. I think they want that, and I think they realized their mistake with Clyde, and I don't think a legitimate running back talent from this class should be overlooked to Kansas City. I think they could do it.
All right, we're moving on more rapid fire. So to everyone out there, we've kind of hit the hour mark. I'm like you. I didn't even know how it happened. I was just checking in on the time. I was like, oh.
Yeah, it is getting
good
late.
Good graces. So let's talk about these. So I'll just mention the four receivers that are kind of getting mocked in round two. And then just give me a couple landing spots that you like or don't like for all of them. So just like a good or bad landing spot for Christian Watson, Pickens, Sky Moore, and Wandale Robinson.
Yeah, Wandale, no thank you. But Christian Watson and George Pickens, Detroit, Green Bay would be pretty good landing spots, as well as Indianapolis.
Got it. And then Sky Moore, anything with Sky?
Sky Moore, any of those aforementioned teams, I think Chicago would be a good spot for him as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Chicago, they need a receiver. They do not have the first round pick, so I think that's kind of wheels up for Mooney and Kmet. Even if you don't like them, there's just, like, it's pretty impossible for the Bears to bring in competition for them. And then Trey McBride. I think we've both kind of agreed this is not a player we're super excited about, but what's a landing spot where you could get excited?
Probably have to be the Giants. They need one, and that team is probably going to be pretty bad, as well as potentially Green Bay. I'm going back to them. I think they're going to try to load Aaron Rodgers up with any and everybody that he wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Charger fan in me wouldn't hate McBride getting drafted. The problem is they don't have a second-round pick. So probably not going to happen.
Yep.
Now we'll go to round three. So the only position that had some type of interesting hit rate in round three where it's more than one in three do something, is running back.
Right.
We have right now the guys that are probably going to stay in day two would be Isaiah Spiller, James Cook, Brian Robinson, Zamir White, and Rashad White. Are there any teams here that you think are most likely or exciting or not exciting for a running back?
I think B. Rob and Zamir White, I'll cluster them together. I think those are two guys that fit like New Orleans to be that grinder, to be the, mm-hmm. the one and two down grinder in New Orleans. I also think, and you may not like this as a Chargers fan, I think L.A. is a good spot for one of those type running backs to relieve Austin Eckler. They worked in Justin Jackson at times. I think Eckler would still be just fine, but I think that would be a sneaky good spot, maybe like in the fourth round for Brian Robinson or Zamir White to go to the Chargers to just provide some depth at running back. James Cook, I don't know, man. I don't see much from I think he's like James White at best. I don't view him as any sort of feature back. I think he's going to have to hit the best landing spot that utilizes running backs in that nature, and I don't even know if that's New England. So I'm not as high on James Cook as others. And then Isaiah Spiller, he does have a three-down skill set. We know that he's not an explosive athlete. He's going to want to go to a situation where he can play. I think Atlanta, maybe in the third round, would make sense for them. Maybe another, you know, I don't know, Houston, if they wanted to do that. There are just not that many spots that need kind of backs to come in and do that. And then Rashad White, I don't know, man. I've got him at RB5, but it's just – I just feel like it's just a byproduct of the class. I don't know. I think he's just a backup type running back at best at the next level.
Mm-hmm. So I think I agreed with pretty much everything you said, except I'm going to push back a little bit on Rashad White. So what I like about White is that he did demonstrate that he can handle heavy volume on the ground as well as catch a ton of passes through the air, and he's got the size and the speed. So, I mean, I haven't been watching this guy on film. I know that he was in Arizona. It's not necessarily the best competition possible, but I think he's someone where if he went to Buffalo or Atlanta, I think there's a few spots where I could actually kind of get excited. I think even the Cardinals, just because he has that potential to, I think especially the Cardinals, where you could see him relieving James Conner of the receiving work. And James Conner has not been the healthiest back. And Rashad White strikes me as the guy in here that has the most upside per game. And you're probably right. He's probably not talented enough to just be the feature back over and over again. But he's someone at least that I've been looking at and thinking I'll probably target him in my dynasty rookie drafts, just because I think any game that he's the guy, he could be the type that's out there for pretty much every snap based on his skill set.
Okay. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I just honestly think he's going to be a fifth-round pick. Mm. And I think once that happens, like I think it's already in my head. I think he's going to be a fourth, fifth-round pick. And because of that, just where he's going, where I'm seeing him go, I'm just like I'm not in at that price if he's a fifth-round pick. But we'll find that out real soon.
Yeah, we will. All right, now before we go, this has been a nice, fun first episode. Talking about FTN for a second, I've been doing a lot of best ball content my first couple weeks at FTN. So if you're getting fired up about some of the rookies we've talked about, you want to draft some of them, then check out my rankings on FTN Fantasy. You can get my best ball rankings, my positional rankings. Right now, Underdog Fantasy has a huge super flex best ball tournament. So my super flex top 240 is on FTN. So you can kind of see how I'm attacking those drafts. And I have three written pieces at FTN. Well, we'll say two and a half. So two that are currently out on the site. We've got the Best Ball 101 strategy guide. If you want to learn more about best ball, where you're basically drafting and then it's set it and forget it. There's no waiver wire. There's no trades. There's nothing. It's just like you're not dropping players or adding players. It's kind of nice. You just draft your team and then see what happens. So if you're like me and you just like to draft, I'm not as big of a waiver wire type person, best ball is probably for you. So that article breaks down how to get started, some basic strategy. That way you're not drafting total fish squads from day one. You can actually have teams that might compete and win you some money. And then I talk about stacking a little bit, because that's a very important concept in best ball. I know a lot of people are nervous about stacking. What is stacking? I break that down. I have another article, 8 players to target at ADP. Now you can kind of see some players that I'm targeting already. I'm the sicko that's already drafting 2022 squads. Who am I taking? You can find out in that article. It's totally, both of those are free to read. Then I said 2.5 because I'm finishing up an article right now. We're recording this on Tuesday night. It's probably going to be out on Wednesday. It is a big in-depth research piece that I did all about the math behind stacking. Because in the Best Ball Guide 101, I'm like, hey, you should stack. Here's a little theory as to why logically you should like this strategy. And then I dive in to 200,000 teams that have been drafted the past 2 seasons in best ball. And I analyze why stacking is very important for the tournaments and just kind of showing through the data like, hey, if you want to increase your chances at making money, you have to be pairing your quarterback with other skill players on their team. So that's going to be out. That's all on FTN Fantasy. I'll have more content coming soon to bets and to daily. I'm going to have a lot of new stuff coming out with FTN data. And then the last plug is on FTN Daily. There is so much going on. There's optimizers for MLB, NBA. We had an optimizer for the Masters. And then on FTN Bets, there's daily bets across tons of sports. We even have UFC. So just got to, I mean, what's fun about this is I'm checking all these boxes off. And as a new FTN employee, I'm using these tools. And it's cool. I've never had tools like this before. And I'm like, wow, I guess I'm putting money on the Masters. And I'm actually doing okay. So it's kind of fun toying with these optimizers and kind of taking that dive. I know you've taken the dive a little bit with like baseball where it's like, hey, I don't necessarily know a ton about this sport, but if you're giving me these tools, then God damn it, we're going to check them out.
That's right.
So
that's right.
That's how it is on FTN.
Well, Josh, great first episode, man. It felt good getting back in the saddle, getting it in with you, man. And as we go, I'm sure people will continue tapping in and enjoying the content. So if you are listening for the first time because you wanted to hear Larky, press the subscribe button, subscribe to the show, subscribe to the network, stay tapped into all the dope content creators that FTN has to offer. As Josh said, make sure you go to FTNFantasy.com, FTN Daily, FTN Bets, FTN everything to check out all the dope stuff. And Josh and I think we'll do it again. I think we'll do it again next week, Josh. I think the people may like that. You down to come back next week, do it again?
Yeah, I think we'll make this a weekly show. I don't know what.
Yeah, we'll do this.
Yeah.
Weekly. That'll work. All right. So for Ray Garvin, for Josh Larky, for FTN, we out of this thing, man. Peace.